Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, we're talking about holiday spending and the nasty surprise you may have had travelling abroad this summer. The turmoil in Westminster has taken its toll on sterling with negative effects for your holiday exchange rate. What can you do to limit the damage? And is there a silver lining for investors? If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Perhaps the most tangible effect of the UK's political crisis is the devaluation of the pound versus other currencies. Last week, sterling fell to its lowest level versus the dollar since October 2016, just a few months after the EU referendum. And when it comes to spending in euros on the continent, UK holidaymakers will struggle to get better than one for one on their pounds and pence once all the fees and charges are taken into account. To discuss what, if anything, you can do to limit the damage, I'm joined by my Fidelity colleague Dan Lane. Dan, welcome along. We will come to the specific impacts on investments near the end of this, but let's start with how we got here. The pound has lost value versus other currencies, and Brexit appears to be the biggest factor in that, doesn't it?
Yeah, so you're right there. It tends to be just worry and fear that's done it since that, you know, since 2016. You can plot a fairly accurate graph, just the trajectory going downwards since then. Really, what we're talking about here is that, you know, people scared of a very messy Brexit, and who can really blame them, that will maybe keep interest low for a long time or even lower than they are now. And you'll start to see reduced demand for the pound. All of this is, you know, it is built out of fear. There's a little bit of, you know, knowledge behind it. But really what it is just people scared that Brexit will make the pound less attractive.
Yeah. And then that has sort of knock-on effects in the economy. It's thought that obviously if your currency is weaker and as households, you have to buy goods which are perhaps imported from overseas. You're importing inflation, and so your costs go up because your currency has gone down. I will say that that hasn't been completely apparent in the inflation figures, which have stayed pretty stable and level in that period. Actually, one of the explanations that was given to me by an economist as to that is that, yes, we'll be importing inflation, but also we're importing some deflation for different things, lower costs in emerging markets to produce things and rest of it. So there's lots going on when it comes to currency. But let's turn to how most people will feel those currency movements, or how they'll feel them most directly, I guess, which is when they spend money overseas on holiday. That's when they convert their pounds and pence into euros or dollars or whatever it is. I said at the top that you're going to struggle to get better than one for one pounds to euros. That's because, as well as just the exchange rate that you'll see on the news, there's a bunch of other costs, aren't there, when it comes to spending in foreign currencies?
Yes, and that's really important to mention, actually, because what people do is they get really focused on that kind of third or fourth decimal point whenever they go to the post office or wherever they get their money changed. But really, there's so many hidden costs that it just kind of slap you up front. We actually had a chat the other day about this, about how you can really do your best to get the most amazing rate, and then suddenly there's a big commission cost, and you're too far into the decision that you just pay it.
And it's a real mishmash. You've got a headline exchange rate, and that's what you'll see, you know, 1.1223 whatever versus the euro, but then you've got to factor in that actually each individual company will give you a different rate that depends on its costs and its profits. Then you might have one-off fees if it comes to taking money out of an ATM, say, and that will be expressed as a single figure. It's quite difficult to really know what you're getting, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there's things like if you're changing money at the airport, you're paying a premium because of just how easy that is, or probably just how lazy you've been in not looking up, and, you know, you're banking on just doing everything at the last minute. You are paying a premium for that. Likewise, if you're changing money a few weeks out, or you can shop around, you're more likely to get a better rate from a really kind of stripped back outfit that it really hasn't been advertising, because you're not paying for anything else.
Yeah, it's a bit like petrol stations, right?
Exactly.
Be honest, what's your sort of habits when it comes to getting holiday monies? I mean, do you forensically look for the best deals, as we're all told that we should do, or do you just stick it on a card and see what happens?
Normally, what I have been doing in the kind of the past 10 years really is just I turn into my dad, and I become this kind of FX trader in the like the 2 weeks before my holiday, and I do get obsessed by it, to no great success really. And then, you know, you're on holiday and you start looking for these little exchanges.
It's true that, actually. I had a conversation with a colleague recently who sort of asked, well, you know, should I buy euros now or wait, you know? Mm. And of course, first of all, I've no idea.
Yeah.
Didn't know. But actually what I stressed to them is that, look, all that's well and good, but actually what's going to matter far more is how you spend your money. Mm. On cards, cash, ATMs, whatever it is. And that's probably going to have, unless you're spending, I don't know, tens of thousands of pounds,
yeah,
that's going to matter more than the overall rate that you get.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a big difference here. I had a family member phone me. I mean, I was really flattered that she thought that I might know what I'm talking about in terms of currency, but she's buying a property abroad. In which case, that actually means a lot, those slight changes in exchange rate. Mm. You know, that's really quite significant. So
yeah,
that conversation was quite important. But for the rest of us, we might not be able to get that extra, you know, beer on the beach or whatever.
Yeah.
But it really does come down to just a little change in your spending when you're abroad. So for me, the big thing is, can I get access? Do I have to carry around this little, you know, pouch full of these foreign notes, or can I just use a card, which I'm gravitating more towards now?
Yeah, I mean, I'll confess, I never used to pay it much attention, really, which is a cardinal sin. But then you get these sort of psychological points where, I mean, once you know for sure that you're getting fewer euros than your pounds, which has been the situation, not in terms of the headline exchange rate, but by the time you've factored in all the other costs, and you go and you want to spend 100 euros and it's cost you, you know, 102 pounds or something,
yeah,
that's when you really feel it. And actually, I was on holiday last week, went to an ATM. I think it was a Santander, it was a big high street name. £5 was the ATM charge. So when you see those sorts of things, you really start paying attention to these sorts of charges. Now, what I wanted to do in this conversation was give some broad rules of thumb about what people can take away and bear in mind when it comes to holiday spending. Because, look, if you're really into this stuff and you want to cut everything to the bone, there's some brilliant guides out there. It's probably a better format for you to read this stuff than it is for us to go through it on a podcast. Mm. But look at those guides. Just Google it, frankly. All the rates are updated. The best products are updated. Look those up if you're really into that. What I wanted to do was give the sort of lazy person's guide to this. What can they do if they haven't planned it down to the nth detail? What can they do just to broadly understand that they're not going to be completely ripped off when it comes to holiday spending?
Yeah, I mean, it's important to say there that this is all, let's use this example as one point in time. If you're trying to predict things in the short term, well, I mean, you're a better person than I am. I have no idea what's going to happen. So let's say that you're doing this today and there's all these options out there. Now, if you're traveling frequently, probably the best thing you can do is to get a specialist card for holiday spending. Now, there are a few out there. Now, this could be a credit card, and there's all sorts of extras that come with that, and good extras. But these might not be great for withdrawals. I know that I had a horrid time in America trying to spend on certain cards. And Spain, you know, forget about it in the South Coast. Prepaid cards can be really good with good rates. But again, you can't use them for certain things, and they don't really like them for things like car hire, petrol, and...
Yeah, and the difference you're talking about there is you've got the credit cards that we're familiar with. Everyone knows what a credit card is. Prepaid cards, Monzo would be an example of that. That's a very advanced one with lots of bells and whistles, but effectively you can use it for that. You can load up a card with money, and certain ones will have very good exchange rates on them, and they will have very low or no fees for spending using that card, which is typically a Visa or a MasterCard. That can be a very good way to do it. But as you say, you might not be able to spend on certain things. Car hire companies and petrol stations require a credit card.
Yeah.
So that's where it may be better to have a more traditional credit card, albeit one that's sort of aimed at holiday spending.
Yeah, and I to be honest, I think mainland Europe hasn't really caught up with this prepaid method of payment in a lot of areas. You know, Monzo, you mentioned there, they only recently started to put your name on the card, and people really hated that, taking that, because they didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
They thought it was a credit card. Of course, it isn't. And it gets very messy. So think about what you're spending on. As well, you said about, you know, a lot of them use the prevailing kind of MasterCard rate or something, which actually takes your decisions on exchange rate out of it, which is actually nice to be quite removed. Yeah. And you just let them get on with whatever the daily rate is.
That's sort of spending on cards. You've got to be careful, though, when you use those cards to withdraw cash. Credit cards typically will charge an interest rate. And so if you really read the advice around this, it's sort of, yeah, use a credit card, spend on the credit card, but pay it off while you're still on holiday. Well, I can't be bothered to do that. I'm going to say that. Yeah. So from all of that, my takeaway would be that I'm probably best off with a prepaid card that I can load up money on. And when I'm doing my card spending overseas, I can do it on that. I do like to take cash around with me as well, not loads and loads and loads for sort of safety issues. In fact, I might lose it. And for that, people are going to be probably best going to a bureau de change. What you don't want to do, presumably, is leave that to the last minute.
No, and this, you know, we said that at the top of the show, this is a, you do pay a big premium for this. I mean, for leaving things to the last minute. Now, if you've been busy and you know that you're going to pay that premium and you're happy enough, well, it's kind of for you. For most of us, that won't be good enough. You're going to want to do other things like minimizing those ATM withdrawals. Like you said, you were slapped with a one-off fee that actually takes out all those calculations that you've been doing because it's now negligible. There'll be often one-off fees that will rub out all the work that you've been getting and that just makes it all pointless. And then there's all sorts of things you need to think about whenever you get given that payment that the card machine in the restaurant says, do you want to pay in GBP or EUR?
Yes.
And then you look blankly at the waiter while he's tapping his pen.
This is dynamic currency conversion, isn't it? It's one of the things you'll read about when you look into getting the cheapest holiday money. But as you say, you probably experience it with a chip and pin machine.
Yeah.
You get two options to pay in euro. Well, if you're on the continent, in euros and in pounds. You'll also get some other numbers just to baffle you even more. And then you have to choose which one you want to do. It's not obvious, but the rule of thumb is always choose the local currency, which if you're on the continent would be in euros, because then you're not requiring the merchant to do a conversion for you, essentially.
Absolutely.
Where they might have and probably will have a poor rate that will cost you more in the long run.
Yeah, always, always, always go local. You don't want any middleman there.
Okay, fine. Well, there is a lot to remember there. I guess the broad rule of thumb is just do a little bit of thinking ahead of time. Mm-hmm. If you want to get one of these cards, you can do it. That's a one-off bit of admin, but then you've got it. Like you say, if you're traveling frequently, it's probably going to pay off in time. Let's go on to the other part of this conversation, which is about the what it all means for investors. A weak pound doesn't sound good. We know that it can hurt households, but there might be a reason why there's a silver lining when it comes to UK investors. What is that?
Yes, and this is very much to do with the way that the UK market works and the way that the FTSE is set up. If anywhere between 66 and 75% of the company's earnings on the FTSE come from abroad. So think about companies like Burberry or some of the mining companies. Huge operations abroad, and that money has to come home, and that has to be reported in the UK. So what happens then is that, you know, that those huge earnings abroad are then converted into pounds. Now, if we have a low pound, that's actually very good for these companies and these earnings and the shareholders. And this is why a lot of the time you will see when the pound going down, the FTSE going up. Because that is expressed in, you know, the market watchers believing and knowing that money has to come back and that has to be converted, and that will be positive for these UK companies.
Yeah, it's a mathematical thing, isn't it? There's if pound weakens and you're earning your money in the US, those dollar earnings are going to be worth more pounds because the pound is weaker. We're talking there about the FTSE 100. That's where you see the biggest effect. 70-odd% of the earnings from those companies have made overseas. You also see an effect further down the index as well, don't you? I mean, even the FTSE 250, something like half the earnings are overseas. So that's why you don't see really negative or seemingly negative news for the UK economy necessarily hurting UK share indices, which I guess a lot of UK investors will still overweight.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a really good thing to talk about. I wrote about this a while ago, actually, that we talk about the FTSE 100 being a foreign market, and then people tend to say the domestically focused 250, FTSE 250.
Yeah.
Now, that's just not true anymore.
No,
it used to be. But FTSE 250 companies are spreading abroad. Actually, even if you look down to the AIM 100, a lot of those companies are moving abroad. I mean, you look at the likes of ASOS and Boohoo with massive operations on the continent and moving into the US. I think about Fevertree moving into the US as well. So This feeling that these domestic focused companies are going to suffer, it just doesn't hold true anymore. And you will start to see these currency movements filter down. FTSE 100, you'll see it more pronounced, but you will start to see it further down the index as well.
Okay, well, one thing to be sure of is that we're going to see more currency movements in the weeks ahead as the news remains unstable. Dan, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in. That's it for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Ed.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.